Welcome back to Three Chicks Review Comics. From New York, I'm Kelly of Comics Should Be Good.
And I'm Sue from Boston from DC Women Kickin' Ass.
And this is Three Chicks Review Comics. Welcome back, everybody, to Three Chicks Review Comics. Sue and I are here with your reviews, and then later on we are going to have the amazing Dustin Nguyen to talk all about Batman Little Gotham. It will probably mostly be an interview with me fangirling all over all my favorite things about Batman Little Gotham, but I will do my best to reporter up and ask some actual real questions. We'll see how that works out. In the meantime, let's start off with some reviews. First up, we have an advance review of Saga number 13. That's right. Next week, next Wednesday, what is that? For some reason my calendar says January 2014. 13? No, it will be the 14th. August 14th, we have got Saga making its triumphant return. For those of you who've been reading, I'm sure you're just as excited as Sue and I are about this. For those of you who haven't been reading, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you. Because let me tell you this story. I have two younger brothers. And just bear with me, because I don't really usually tell stories. We usually just get right to the reviews. Not this week. No, sir. I have two younger brothers. The one closest to me, he and I grew up reading comics together. It was a huge part of our youth. Like, we bonded over it and everything. Our younger brother, David, was never that into it. And really, as a kid, he didn't even really like reading. And, like, there was even this concerted effort from my brother and I to, like, get him into comics, because not only could he share it with us, and they were awesome, but he would also read more, and that would be good for him. No. He didn't really care. I mean, I have these really great memories of, like, sitting on the couch reading comics with him, and I don't know, maybe he enjoyed it from a bonding standpoint too, but like, the comics just didn't take. Every once in a while, for Christmases and birthdays though, I give people I know really well, who I think will respond to a certain comic book, a comic book. This year I gave everyone who would stand still long enough Saga trades, because not only was it awesome, but it was super cheap. So it was like this great gift to give. It was like less than $10. And so I don't know. I gave out like, I don't know, half a dozen of them. I gave one to each of my brothers. My brother Scott, the one who reads comics, read it, really liked it, said so right away. I didn't know if David would ever even read it. I get this text message last week in the middle of the night. Kelly, is this other Saga book out yet? And I was like, yeah, actually, the trade just came out in July. I was like, you want me to get it for you? He's like, no, I'll get it. I need to read it now. Like, he was so into it, and it made me deliciously happy. That's how good this book is. Even people who didn't like comics when they were kids and don't really like them now are like, when is the next trade coming out? So, here's the material for the third trade. We're starting off with Saga 13. This is by the wonderful Brian K. Vaughan, Fiona Staples. Phonographics does letters and design. I think Fiona Staples also does letters for the handwritten stuff.
Yes.
And it's amazing. It comes out on Wednesday, the 13th, or 14th, rather. We're going to talk about it without spoilers, because it's an advance review, so don't worry if you're planning to read. What can I say? I love this book. I mean, it won all the Eisners for a reason. Although, why Fiona Staples wasn't nominated and didn't win is irritating to me, but we won't get into that.
Because she's a woman.
I mean, maybe.
Oh, I don't know. You know.
It was nuts.
One of those, I don't know. Remember, isn't it Sesame Street? One of these things is not like the other. one.
It's hard to be mad because David Aja won for Hawkeye, and is that our other favorite thing in the world?
She wasn't nominated.
She wasn't nominated, so far as I can tell, which is just a crime.
The problem I had. If she didn't win, I mean, she didn't win, but she wasn't nominated. How do you have? It's like those people are like, how do you have best movie, best actor, best actress, but you don't have the person up for best director?
Yeah.
How do you have best comic book, best writer, but you don't have the person who draws the book up as a best director?
And I thought, I don't know if you read, you know, Brian K. Vaughan wasn't there, but he had a statement, and I thought his statement was not only hilarious and charming, as I have expected him to be, but I also thought that it was very generous, and rightly so, toward Fiona. Because really, what is this book without Fiona? I mean, yeah, if Brian K. Vaughan could do it, would it be as good? No. She's amazing.
Amazing. I agree.
Anyway, so this book basically picks up, I guess it's back in time a little bit from where we left off. You guys may or may not remember, our characters were looking for the writer of the supposedly terribly cheesy romance novel that they kind of bonded over when they first met. Everyone's suffering a bit from the death of Marco's father, exhibiting serious post-traumatic stress, Marco especially. It's just full of... All I can think of when I think of this book is that I love the characters so much. Like, I am so embarrassingly invested in them. Like, I care about them so much. Years and years ago, a friend of mine named Brooke used to make fun of me when I really loved a TV show that she also loved, by the way, and we would talk about it. And invariably, at some point in the conversation, she'd be like, you know these people aren't real, right? And I'd be like, shut the fuck up. This is amazing, and they might as well be real, and they feel real, and that's how I know it's good, because I'm so invested. And that's how I feel about all the Saga characters. Even characters that in another book you would maybe not be supposed to not like Gwendolyn, which how could you not like her with Fiona's design of her? She's amazing. But, you know, that's like the old girlfriend who's like hunting for, you know, the old boyfriend. So, you know, in another book, maybe she would be villainous, or you wouldn't supposed to be like her, but you totally like her. She's amazing. And I like that. I like the meta-ness of what Brian Vaughan does. Like, you know, the Will's old girlfriend, like, shows up and is talking to him. Like, maybe she's dead. Maybe he's hallucinating. We don't know. And then she's like calling it out, like, that there's sexual tension between he and Gwendolyn. Like, it's just so funny and smart. And I've realized that the people who don't like it just pretty much really don't like that kind of thing. Like, that smart, witty kind of meta-ness, it just doesn't work for, like, that doesn't, they don't respond to it. That's the only way I can explain people who really don't like Saga, and then these people like me who are, like, fanatical about it. I don't know. It's amazing. The jokes, the character beats, the overarching story, the epicness of the space saga, it's just great. I don't know. That's all I got.
Why don't you like it, Kelly? Could you explain in more detail this problem you have with this book? Because I don't think you're being fair to it now.
And can we talk about how adorable Fiona Staples draws little baby Hazel? So
baby
fucking
Hazel.
Cute. So fucking cute.
Here's what I'm really... I like all these characters in the book, and I think they're fantastic. And I hear there's a Lion Cat t-shirt, which I need to get my hands on. I know.
I must have
that.
They
were at SDCC.
Have that.
And I would like to have one. The character that I'm kind of like, really like right now, is the mother-in-law.
She's awesome.
And here's why. Because you don't see older women in comics too often.
Yeah.
And she could easily be sort of like just a really black and white mean person, because she was kind of like mean to her daughter-in-law at first. But I think that they really sort of interestingly fleshed her out, her relationship with her son, and I'm looking forward after this book to seeing more of a relationship with some of the other characters, and I'm kind of like loving her. She's kind of like, you know, just an interesting character. Look, I read a lot of comics every single week. I know you do too. I read a lot of really bad comics, and I read a lot of mediocre comics, and then occasionally, when it's a really good week, I read comics that I really like. This comic is beyond any of those. This comic is just so perfect in every single way. I mean, I think the closest that comes to it right now is Hawkeye, although frankly, I think Hawkeye is suffering from the changeover in artists continuously. Well,
but you know what? I would actually really love to talk about that because, you know, I wasn't reading Why the Last Man when it was first coming out into issues. I read it in trade. So I don't remember if Brian K. Vaughan does this with his books, this system that they've got Saga on where...
Oh, yeah, they take a break.
They do the six issues or whatever it is, and then they take a break, which allows Fiona time to catch up, probably just literally to catch up. And then they release the trade, which, I mean, it not only has the benefit of keeping the final product. I mean, as hard as it is to wait those couple off months, you know, the benefits you're reaping are so huge. Not only are you keeping a really perfect product that doesn't ever have to have quality, you know, it doesn't have to suffer in quality or change so that when you're done, you're going to have this giant omnibus that has every... Sorry. Page drawn by Fiona Staples, and that will be amazing, right? But it also allows people who maybe weren't reading to read the first two trades that are both out and then start right here and not be lost. Like, it's a brilliant, rather simple way to do this. And I would say that Hawkeye is a great example of a book I adore, a book that I think is fantastic, but a book that suffers slightly by having to come out every single month because had to have some artist sub-ins that have been really good artist sub-ins, but they're still not what David Aja is doing.
I agree. But I think that's also the difference between Image and Marvel. I mean, Brian K. Vaughan gets to do what he wants at Image, right? I mean, it's Image.
I hope so.
And I'm pretty sure he does.
Well, I mean, certainly the quality looks like he is.
Well, the quality is, and plus the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, what it sells is what, you know, what comes into him. And if he feels very strongly that he wants to take a break, they're not going to cry. I mean, the flippin' trade is selling off the rocks. Marvel is different. You know, Marvel needs to make they need to sell. And so, you know, you're not going to see Marvel saying, oh, okay, Matt Fraction, you know, let's man David Aja here, you get to do six and then you take a break. They never do that. They give the artist the break, or they might have a fill-in writer occasionally.
I know, but I'm saying in this world that we now live in, like, I feel like companies like Marvel and DC need to be a little more flexible and a little smarter about what the marketplace will bear. And especially in this era of trade waiting, there seems to be a huge benefit, not only in the quality of the product of adopting a method more like this, but just about being able to get your readers on board. I mean, you know, That's a huge issue for a lot of people. I mean, that has happened to me many times where I've been like, man, I wish I was reading that book, but they're on issue 21.
Well, look what they just did. DC just announced today they're going to go on alternating artists for Batman, Superman, Jay Lee, and get this, Brett Booth. That's like saying, that's like saying, well, you know, we're going to get two actresses, okay? We're going to get, you know, Dame Helen Mirren, and then we're going to get one of the girls that was, like, on The Hills. You know, I mean, come on. That's not even like, I mean.
Wow.
I mean, I could see them, you know, think about complimentary art. I mean, at least with Hawkeye, they're trying to do complimentary art. I don't like Polito on the book. I'll just admit it. I mean, that annual just did not work for me. He seemed to be struggling too hard to be David Aja and be himself. Where with Franco Francavella, I felt like he was more like, I'm just going to do my own shit, man. And you love it, so shut up. And I felt better that way. But I mean, Jay Lee is absolutely gorgeous. Now, if you came to me and you said, well, it's going to be Jay Lee and like Emma Rios, I would go, yeah, that's awesome. That would make sense.
I still wouldn't like that for alternating issues. Are they doing alternating issues or alternating arcs?
Well, I don't know. Alternating something, but I can just tell you it's going to be like, hey, Jay Lee, Brett Booth. Scritchy scratchy. No, thank you. Scritchy scratchy. I mean, honestly, I think Brett Booth is just like, ugh.
Listen, I have been very cruel to the man in the sense that I hate his art more than just about anything out there. I also think he's not a nice person. He behaves very badly on Twitter and such. I feel for him being in this scenario. I that's not fair to anyone. Like, nobody should have to alternate arcs with someone of Jay Lee's caliber. Like, I mean, that's like having to alter or alternate issues is even worse, if that's what it is. Like, that's up there with alternating issues with, you know, it's not J.H. Williams, but it's in that neighborhood, like, you know.
Well, they already have somebody doing that.
Well, and it's not working. I don't like that book.
Yeah.
But I mean, I that's bad news. I feel bad that he's been put in that position. Maybe he thinks that that's an awesome opportunity, and or maybe he's just taking one for the team. But I can't imagine he's happy with that. That's a rough gig, man.
Yeah, he's alternating arcs. Yeah, I just
arcs think is slightly better, but yeah, it's not great.
I'm
saying is, you know, we had the reality check conversation with Jeff Boucher last time, and it was super enlightening. And so I'm not saying that Marvel and DC are going to change their method any day. I'm just saying it's working really well for Saga. They won all the Eisners. You know, people love this book. It's selling right. like crazy. And maybe there's something here, you know, the marketplace changes and you got to be able to, got to be able to change with it. And this is a really good compromise that gives you the quality that you want. And then also allows you to get those readers that maybe missed out initially. I just think it's really smart. Anyway, what the fuck do I know? I'm just a girl on a podcast you're listening to for free.
Yeah.
All right, we got to move on because we have a guest coming on and we need to do another review. So our second book is Trillium, number one. This is new creator-owned from Vertigo. This is pretty much Jeff Lemire doing it on his own. He does everything except where he's got a part color assist. I mean, some of the colors he's doing himself, but some of the colors are by Jose Villarubia. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Letters are also not Jeff Lemire. They're Carlos M. Mangal. I thought this was really cool. You know, after I reviewed it for CBR, I saw a lot of people talking about it online, and they had clearly read the print version while I had read it digitally.
Right.
And I guess with the print version, I just want to say this up front. So I guess for people who are reading in print, there were people who were having a lot of fun kind of experimenting with the form of you could read either story first, things like that. Interestingly enough, reading it digitally presented only really one way to read it. You know, I couldn't choose which story to start with. It started me with Nika's story. That said, I'm glad I read it that way. I think it really worked. It was my favorite part of the story, so I felt like it was the strongest way to start. I just really liked this. I mean, I think it was, I think there were some things that kept it from being like a perfect first issue for me. I thought his loose art style really works well in some ways, but it's a bit of a weakness in other ways. And I found the Nika stuff far more interesting because I felt like he was really letting go in the creativity there, whereas the past and the war stuff not only was a little bit more cliche, but he felt more reined in by like actual events as opposed to, hey, I'm going to invent planets and, you know, a disease and a future and everything. So so that worked better for me. But I just thought the way the story kind of had two endings and then they finally fully make sense at the second ending was super cool. And I like seeing Vertigo, i.e. DC, do something this kind of ballsy and cool. and so felt so indie, you know, the way the art is and everything. So I'm in. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it. I agree. I think that I wish that the people at Comixology would look at trying to help people replicate it, you know? I mean, yeah. A simple thing like, you know, you can start here, you can start here.
I agree.
Would have been cool. I do agree with you. I think I made the right choice by having Nika's story forced upon me, because I felt that there was more to grab you and bring you in. I mean, I think Lemire does a really good job at world building. He's done it before. He did it with Seatooth. I think he did it here. I felt that the pencils and the way he draws this very loose style was much, much more engaging to start
off
with.
On
Nika's side.
Totally.
Where I think if I had started off on the other side, even though I am used to Lemire's style, it takes a little bit more to sort of like, okay, where am I going? What am I looking at? What's going on there? I thought he jammed a lot in to the first story, and I felt that Nika's story actually was a little bit longer. I felt there was a little bit too much exposition. I felt it could have been trimmed just a little bit. But I thought overall I really liked the story. I liked the character too. I thought he did a good job on, you know, sort of giving us some insight into who this character was and where she came from. The second half of the book, you know, frankly, it just didn't work as well for me. Again, yeah. I think it's the reasons why you brought it up. I think that there's a lot of cliches in there. The white man going into the darkest of Africa or wherever he is. I brought up some uncomfortable cliches.
Yeah, I agree.
It didn't. I thought there were some really interesting panels, like the one where he sort of finds himself with all these bodies in sort of the pond. That was arresting, but honestly, I am not really feeling any need to feel a compulsion to read about this other character yet. The only thing that's interesting about him is the fact that he ran into the other character.
Yeah.
So he's got some, you know, he's got some stuff to prove in the next issue to make me feel like, you know, that these two characters are going to pull equal weight. That said, you know, I do like Lemire a lot. I think he's a strong writer. I mean, he's very confident, knows where he's going. So I'm definitely coming back for issue one. I agree with you. It's great to see something like this coming out of Vertigo and DC again. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that made Vertigo so cutting edge, so brilliant, something that made people want to go into comics. I'm glad they're doing it. And, you know, like I said, pick it up. It's different. It's certainly different than other stuff that you're going to see out there in terms of mainstream corporate comics. But it's worth it. It definitely is worth it.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a weird one, but one you should pick up. I mean, I think it falls. I'm very excited to have it. Like, we need more cool shit like this, coming out of Vertigo, coming out of comics period. You know, they had Collider last week. I don't know if you read that. You should if you didn't. It was awesome. So, you know, Collider, The Wake, and Trillium, like, that feels a tiny bit like a Vertigo resurgence for me, you know?
Yeah.
And I love seeing that. I agree with you 100%. It's you know, it's funny because even when you and I agree on books, I don't know that we always agree 100% on what the strengths and weaknesses are, but I think we're completely in sync in this one. I mean, had this just been Nika's story, I still would have liked it, but I would have missed the really creative device he used to relay the story.
Right.
Had it just been William's story, I would have been pretty cold on it. Because it really did. It leaned really heavily on cliche, and it's like, you know, Jeff Lemire is a good writer, and he's got a very evocative art style, so you know, it played better than some cliches do, but you know, it's like the white man in the Amazon or the jungle, whatever, or the white man having war flashbacks, like, you know, that's pretty well worn territory. He does okay with it because he's Jeff Lemire, and so it's not bad, but it wasn't that compelling.
Nope.
But the way it all came together really worked. I'm super invested in Nika and kind of the future and what's going on there. And I'll be really interested to see how he plays this out. So, but there were also like weird things where, you know, I said this in my review on CBR, like when the artist and the writer are the same person, my expectation for a book to have cohesion is even higher than usual. Like, you know, I always look for great creative teams who are really working together well, but when the writer and the artist is the same, my expectations are even bigger. And like, there were a couple places where like the line would be, this underbrush couldn't be thicker. And then I'm looking at the panel and I'm like, really? Cause it almost looks like they're in a field, you know, like it yeah, wasn't, you know, they weren't, it wasn't completely in sync.
So. No, I also had a couple of challenges with a couple of his layouts where I couldn't, and this may be the downside of reading digitally versus in print, mm-hmm. but I couldn't really figure out. I was like, okay, where's my eye going? What's the story being told? It wasn't as clear as I thought. And, you know, it's always going to be that way when you have the writer and the artist in one, because they're going to always sort of know what they're doing. But overall,
that's a good point. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's true. That they're so in it in their own head that maybe the editor isn't there on the same level, you know?
But that's what editors are for. So, well, but yeah. again, my feeling is that given the way the layout was, I assume that if I had it in print, maybe it would be that much more clear.
Right.
So, you know, and then that's always going to be the downside for the time being of, you know, you're not sure, you know, what to read and how to read it. And, right. You know, they'll work that out. But yeah, no, I agree. It's nice to see Vertigo coming out. I'm loving The Wake. I told Scott Snyder, I saw him in Boston.
It's so good.
And it's really good. And he told me there's some really, really cool stuff coming up on that book. So it's that's cool. Exciting. His American Vampire has a big sort of like annual, I guess you would call it. Has lots of great writers, including our good friend Mr. Greg Rucka, who will be returning to the folds of DC, as well as some other great writers. And yeah, I had a lot of people come to me and go, oh, you really should read Collider, you really need to read Collider. And you know, I think it was just like, yeah, I'm really topped off on comics this week. You know, it's like I don't get reviewers copies from Vertigo or DC. And so, you know, at a certain point, I have to say, yeah, I can't really read it. You know, sorry. Don't know it. Don't know what it is. You know, so I'm glad you liked it.
The cover alone should get you in there. It's super interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give it
Well, like I said, you know, I mean, I have to pay for all my stuff except, you know,
I had to pay for that too. Vertigo / DC / Marvel / Icon pretty much do not give out reviewer copies.
Yeah.
Even for someone like me who works at CBR, which is like a legit place, you get a lot of free comics digitally, PDFs and things from smaller places. They're really good about it, but Marvel and DC pretty much do not do it, which is, I find particularly hilarious because, you know, you always see this stuff about like, oh, Marvel and DC paying for their reviews again. And I want to be like, dudes, I don't even get comp copies, let alone is nobody giving me money. I can't even get the issues comped.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
All right.
So we are going to bring on Dustin Nguyen.
Yeah.
All right. Let me just try and add him to this call. Let's see if that
works.
He's on. I know.
Yeah, he just sent me an email.
Yeah, it's Dustin.
Hi, it's Kelly. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm
I didn't recognize the ring. I was like, what the? Yeah, I haven't used Skype in like, I haven't used it in like forever.
Well, we'll get you back. We'll get you back in the saddle then.
Right.
You'll have to forgive me both. Sue has a bit of a cold and I'm having a East Coast allergy attack. So we probably sound a little bit more the same than usual and both slightly miserable. Sue, are you there?
Yeah, I'm like, I got like Kong cried from Boston, I think. I think I was got, you know.
What was that show?
It was great. You should come to Boston. You should come next year.
I know. I always want to go, but there's so many cons during the summer. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, there's just too many cons nowadays. Like, it used to be two, and I'd be like, oh, great, it's con season. Now it's con season around.
Like, constantly.
Yeah.
Well, you're on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Yeah, Boston, that's a long way, man, in the summer. Whew.
Well, it's not usually in the summer. It's usually actually right during April school vacation week, actually. And it got postponed this year because of the bombings that occurred, in Boston. And so they had to reschedule it. And so I honestly don't know if they were going to be able to do it or not in such short notice, but they did. And it was a great show. I think, first of all, you know, I think people were really excited because we like the show. It gets bigger and bigger every year. And really, a lot of creators were really great. I talked to them, and they really wanted to come and show support for Boston. But it's a fun show. It's a very comics-oriented show. They just brought in a couple of TV people this year for the first time.
Yeah.
But most of it's just like comics, cosplay. Comics, cosplay.
It goes hand in hand. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So definitely.
Wait, so are you... You're from New York, and Sue is from Boston, or?
Yeah.
I'm from New York. Well, or I live in New York, rather. I'm actually from California, and then Sue is Boston, born and bred. You can hear it in that that voice of hers.
That accent that I have, yeah.
Wait. There's three chicks. Where's the third one?
Oh, Maddie is our honorary forever, apparently, third chick. She's Canadian, but she's not here, actually. She hasn't been able to do it, and we've talked about replacing a third chick, but honestly, the schedule is so tough that I don't know if we'll ever do it at this rate.
Just change your name, then you wouldn't have to worry about anything.
Man, you know how tough rebranding is?
Yeah. We just call whoever our guest is.
You're our third chick. Congratulations.
Our third chick. There you go. We have dude chicks, we have chick chicks. You know, we're not.
All right, I'll do it.
Great.
Good man. Perfect. Good man. So let us start off talking about one of my favorite things on the whole planet Earth, which is Batman Little Gotham.
Thanks for that great article you wrote, by the way.
Oh, thank you. On Lit Reactor?
That made my day. I mean, I really don't even read anything online. Like, I'm not really computer literate, but Derek, you know, he sent it to me. He's like, man, this is a really good day, and, you know, she actually gets it and everything. I was like, oh, that's cool, you know?
Let me just tell you, I filled that post with, you know, they're not really very image-heavy over there. They're much more about the written word, and my editor, I knew he was going to be like, how many images do you have in this thing? And I was like, fuck you, they're all going in. I was like, it's the best way to explain what's so great about it. They're all going in, and he's like, all right. He was like, they are pretty good. So, I am a huge fan. It brings me so much joy. I mean, you know, Sue and I, again, I don't want to get you in trouble with DC, but Sue and I have talked a lot over the last couple of years about how DC is a very tough place for us these days because it's just so relentlessly dark. And, you know, so for me, Batman Little Gotham is just this wonderful, bright spot in the DC universe, you know, alt though it is. And you guys are just bringing it in every issue. Like, every time I think you can't do a better issue, then you do the Aquaman issue, which had me rolling on the floor. Plus, look at how you draw a little octopus and sea, like, unicorn seahorse in the first pages. Like, when I look at that, I'm like, I want... it, when I die, I want to be reincarnated in Dustin Nguyen art. Like, I want him to just illustrate my life, but make it cuter and better and everything happier. It's so good.
You know, like, I mean, we've been very fortunate. I mean, our editorial team, we started out with, you know, Sarah, and now we're with Christy. I mean, if anything, it's really them just, like, staying hands off. And Christy is just amazing. Like, she's my editor when I first broke into comics, and we didn't work together for like 10 years, and now she's senior editor or something like that. She's my editor again, and she's just really hands off. Like, you know, I turn it in, just saying, like, if anything, like, editorial has been really, I mean, that's the great part when they're hands off. So
yeah,
it's great. You know, like, we turn in our scripts, and, you know, she usually gives it, like, she's like, yeah, good to go. And you know, sometimes I'm like, whoa, did she read it? But then she does read it, because sometimes she comes back, she's like, yeah, I really like that blah blah joke, you know. I was like, okay, she read it. And, yeah, everything's been, it helps because the book moves so fast, because I went from just penciling like maybe 20 pages a month on a regular book to now I'm like, those books are 10 pages each, but I do two about doing a book is going through all the edits and everything, but it's been smooth and, yeah, it helps it move really fast too, so.
Wow, that's I'm glad you said that, because I was wondering about the process, because you guys seem to be moving really fast. You seem to be putting out a lot of content, and really cheap content for those of us buying the digital issues. I mean, it's a lot of bang for your buck, especially the stuff watercolored. I mean, I'm probably, people, other fans probably don't love watercolor as much as I do because I'm kind of fanatical about it. But I mean, the fact that you can do a really loose watercolor style for a comic, any comic, kind of blows my mind, and I get so excited to see it. I mean, your Batgirl was it 18 that you did with Brian Q. Miller?
Yeah, yeah.
That, I mean, that was easily one of my favorite comics of the year, of that year. I mean, it was just so revolutionary to see, I don't know, just to see comics colored that way in this age of computer coloring that looks way too slick and way too precise for my tastes and way too bright. Like, seeing it that way with that organic feel, it was really exciting for me.
It was a lot of fun. That was the Clarion issue, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of
fun. That was the Valentine's Day issue. Yeah, I love that issue.
The whole change between mediums during that issue, I mean, a lot of it was Brian. He wanted to, you know, set two different areas. So I was like, well, you know, how about we just try this and that? And he was, a lot of it's just Brian. I mean, he makes things really fun when you work with him, and he's pretty open to everything. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that was a really fun issue.
So when you pitched Little Gotham, was it always with the intention of kind of doing it this way, of getting to do it with this kind of loose watercolor style? I mean, is that what you always had in mind? Did you think they were going to let you do that?
Yeah, I mean, when I pitched it, I knew that we wanted to keep it, because Little Gotham looks pretty much like some of the sketches I do, just for fun, like when I do birthday cards. So when I pitched it, I was like, yeah, you know, let's try to keep the same energy. So it looks like, you know, it's kind of unfinished, but at the same time, you know, we use simple emotions and just, and also it's the only way I could probably do a, you know, a monthly.
So much, yeah.
In that style. And, a lot of it was just, they never really had an issue with how it was drawn or anything. I think the whole time it was really much, can you get it done in time?
Right.
You know, like, so yeah, it pretty much looks the way we pitched it. There are issues where I wish I had more time, obviously. Like, the last few issues has been really tough. But, it helps that, they're fairly simple characters. And I think if there was any other team, like if they asked me to do, like, a Justice League team or an all-Green Lantern team, I wouldn't be able to do it. It's just easier when you kind of understand the characters.
Yeah.
And... yeah, kind of, you know, like when they asked me, okay, draw, you know, Nightwing, it was like, I know exactly how he's going to look, talk, act, walk.
Yeah, you don't have to do a ton of research before you can get started.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Kind of, you know, like when you grow up on something and you kind of just know it, it comes simple. So, I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why you rarely see me draw anything else besides Gotham stuff. Because it's just, you know, it's just effortless for this. So, yeah.
But I think that kind of effortless innate knowledge of the characters really comes through in the scripts as well, just because of the sense of humor. I mean, like, you've got this great joke, you and Derek have this great joke of making fun of Green Lantern in the Aquaman issue, which I just thought was, you know, hilariously on point for, you know, the tonally the kind of book you're doing. For them to, like,
without being
make
mean,
a
right?
Right, without being mean, like, to make this joke at this guy's expense. But, you know, it's just in good fun, right? Like, it all feels in good fun. But
I'm sure they do talk about that when Green Lantern's not around, you know?
Yeah, yes, so. I definitely. Especially depending on which version of Green Lantern it is. So that actually goes a little bit into, you know, you and Derek both write it. So how does that process work for you guys? Does someone do the script and then someone breaks it down, or you write the script together? How does it work?
When we pitched it, we actually went through, like, the entire, like, when we originally pitched it, we only had 12 chapters, actually. We didn't have as much as we do now. Right now, we're on our book, we have up to 24 or 23. But when we initially pitched it, we got together and we just wrote, like, loose outlines. We're like, okay, this month is going to be this month is going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of agreed on what story is going to happen that month, which is good to get everything laid out. So, like, if someone, like, say Damien dies along the way, we've already got our, you know, stories in.
I wanted to ask you on that. I didn't mean to interrupt, but you brought up perfect. What was it with Damien? Did you know that he was going to die? Did they give you a heads up? How did that?
You know, I got the heads up like last year.
Yeah.
Like with the thing with, like, and I think anything in DC or comics is like, you know,
things change last minute so often that maybe I just didn't take it serious. And at the same time, it's like, you know, our book isn't in the same continuity.
Yeah, I mean,
DC.
You're using Oracle, so.
Yeah, so it didn't, you know, it didn't really matter to me, I guess. I guess I was kind of like just selfish that way. I was like, well, you know, so what? Who cares? It's
good.
Not my problem, you know? So, we basically agree on stories, and then Derek and I would go down the list. We're like, all right, you take this month, I'll take that month. That way we kind of stand apart from, you know, we let each other do what each other wants, and then we come back and then we collaborate on the dialogue and stuff. So basically we split up. We're like, okay, you do this month, I'll do that month. And, you know, there's like a few months where I was really behind. And so I was like, hey, Derek, jump in on this month and then I'll dialogue, you know, I'll do dials. And then, basically Derek, he's like, you know, he does like the heavy lifting. He breaks it down and, like, I'll turn in a script. He's like, yeah, man, you're, you need spell check. And, you know, the way you're breaking it down is all off. And so he'll format this whole thing. He'll send it back to me. And I'm like, this looks great, man, but, you know, it's not going to work towards my format. So I go back and it's a lot of back and forth.
Right.
But, it's great to have Derek because he knows, like, how to, like, you know, break down a story. Whereas I know how to, like, pace it out where I'm like, well, you know, paneling will not work if we have it jump from this to that.
Right.
So we go back and forth. And then we'll, like, you know, I talk to him pretty much every day. If not online, we just kind of just text each other for fun. Like, if he'll come up with a funny, like, joke, he'll text it to me, and I'll be like, yeah, that's funny. And then he'll like, oh, no, that's not funny. And, you know, we just kind of, I mean, a lot of it's just, like, midnight talking, coming up with, you know, really stupid things. And, but, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, and the first one that that we pitched was actually the New Year story.
Mm.
That was actually, it's like, even though we started in October, initially, we turned in the whole pitch, and Jim was like, oh, it's really great, you know, and then, you know, I was having, like, the lunch at Waltham. It was, like, one of the last lunches we had or something, and Jim was like, I was like, so what do you think, Jim, it's a go? He's like, you know what, it's a go if you can come up with a script by, you know, Monday for me. And I was like, oh, damn it. So I went home and, like, I was like, well, what's the story about? So that New Year story was actually the story I wrote to pitch the entire series. So it was like, because I wanted to pitch originally, like, we wanted to do more Gotham-centric stories, even though with Batman's in it, it would be very, everything's about Gotham. Kind of like when we did Streets of Gotham, it was a Batman book that had, you know, like, maybe Batman was in the mix, but not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, we've been doing a lot of Robin in the mix, but, yeah, so that was, like, the first pitch, so that was the story that kind of kicked it off, even though it wasn't until four issues later, so.
Did that kind of set the tone for them being holiday or, you know, some kind of event-themed, or was that always your intention, or did that just kind of happen because of the schedule?
Well, the holidays, initially, we pitched it because I was like, you know, oh, man, they're not going to let us do this very long.
Right.
So I was like, you know, what if we make it a holiday book? That would guarantee us at least a year, you know? And, you know, so that was, like, the idea. I was like, you know, that was, like, job security right there.
Right.
And,
That's smart.
But, yeah, it made it easy. But then later on, it became very difficult. I started to feel it was, like, a bad idea because some holidays run really close to each other.
Yeah.
You
start to feel like you're digging for a theme when it's not natural. No, I get that.
A lot of that. And also the launch dates we had digitally, they wanted to come out maybe around the same holidays.
Right.
And holidays like, you know, like Christmas and New Year's, that's really close to each other.
Yeah.
And so that was like one thing where I think I had like a week in between to do it. So
it's brutal.
That became very tough because we had to get ahead of time. But
brutal.
And then, it was brutal. But then in February, they asked if we can double up on stories. And I was like, yeah, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, sure, why not?
You know? No problem. Double the work, no problem.
I think what our head editor told me was, Jim said, why doesn't just do more? It's not like he's doing anything else. You know, it was kind of funny, you know? And, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, I'm only doing 10 pages, you know? So.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Yeah, but
no,
it was cool.
But
I really,
seriously,
got
thanks a lot,
stories.
Though.
Yeah.
Because it's awesome. It's my favorite thing to read. So, if they keep wanting more, does this bode well for us seeing more of this, or is it going to be up in a year?
Right now, we're planning to end what we're doing in a year, but then we are, I mean, for some reason, I mean, I don't know, you edit all this, so I don't know, but, like, for some reason, we only have up to chapter 24 or 23 or something. But on the schedule, when I look overall, it keeps going. They're like, okay, so, you know, in January, do this. And so I don't know if they're assuming we're doing more or we're assuming that. But we've got the, I mean, I've got the feeling from them that I don't think they know that it's ending, even though we've written something. So I think in the next few months we're going to be like, well, you know, so these are the new stories we're picking.
Hey, but, Dustin, you got real quiet. I don't know if you moved your phone, but you got there. That's better. That's better. Yeah. So maybe they don't know you're leaving. Is that what you're telling me?
No. I mean, our breakdown was only till this Christmas. That was like our last story. But then the thing is, we've got the feeling that they think it's going to keep going after that, which I'm fine with, because Derek and I already, you know, we already put together like a list of things we want for the next year. And it won't be, I think next year we will be doing it off where it won't be calendar related.
Right.
No holidays.
Just go into stories,
right? Yeah, we don't want to get redundant, you know. Even though there's a lot of holidays we haven't covered, at the same time, you know, it's like, you don't want to get to the point where you're just picking up like, you know, oh, it's Talk Like a Pirate Day, you know.
Well, I did see that in your con issue that you did, which was very funny, that that Derek wants to get more pirate jokes in there. So maybe you do need a Pirate Day one. But yes, I would agree.
We do. It's this Saturday, this Sunday. So. I'm not kidding. This Sunday, it's Pirate Day.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's not a pirate holiday. It's basically this what we're doing for August is because, you know, there's not really any major holidays in August.
Yeah.
So what we did was basically Batman takes a vacation, you know, and of course he's going to run into problems. So, yeah.
Awesome.
It's funny.
Who is your favorite character to draw?
You know, it's like tough because
they're so good because they're all so good. Dustin.
They Oracle.
It is Oracle. I do a lot of Oracle and Nightwing together because they're, you know, I grew up on that stuff. We haven't been able to like give her like her own story yet.
Oh, but she was so great in the one with her and Talia. Oh, so good.
That was fantastic.
Oh yeah, that was pretty much them, huh?
Yeah, it was. I love that.
You got her voice. Well, you wrote her in BQM's Batgirl, but you definitely you captured her personality, and it was great. And my favorite panel of all time is Oracle eating a freeze pop, which I think the next time I go to a convention, I'm going to ask people, you know, I do different things at convention. I'm going to just like ask, draw me Oracle eating a freeze pop.
That was awesome.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun. Like, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's probably the same characters I like drawing in the main DC universe. Probably,
yeah.
You know, it's like, Redheads and Mr.
Yeah,
Freeze,
you do like Poison Ivy too. I can see how much you love her and the way you draw her. But like your design for Mad Hatter is so good in that 4th of July issue. And then Aquaman. I mean, really, the Aquaman issue I loved. It was one of my favorites. And part of that was the
Aquaman
way you drew him.
Or?
No, I could give two shits about Aquaman, but the way you drew him and then like the jokes. And I mean, the bit about, I'm just going to try not to make it all about bits that people may or may not know. But like the bit where Batman's standing there going over his awesome costume that will help him, you know, swim right next to Aquaman. And then Aquaman's like, no fish scales though, and he's like, no fish scales. I mean, that stuff is so great. Like, it's just funny and smart and cute, and it just makes me so happy. And then, you know, it's just so rare that you get something that is that kind of smart and isn't afraid to be meta with itself, but is also kind of genuine and isn't afraid to be sweet. That's a very rare combination, in my opinion, and something that can deliver that on the writing side and then also has visuals as strong as what you guys are doing that's so tonally in sync with the goal. It's just rare. It's just rare. It's pretty exciting.
I'm just glad. I mean, you know, I don't know how to take compliments, but I'm just glad you really enjoy it. I'm glad you enjoy it. I think it makes it easier when I actually get to, like, have... Like, you know, because, you know, I do the co-writing and then, you know, I draw. And so, oh, is that your phone?
Sue, I think.
It's me. My doorbell.
Oh, okay.
Go right.
Yeah, it helps out that, you know, it helps because, you know, some, like, we do a lot of, like, I wouldn't say rewrites, but, you know, we turn in the script, which gets approved, and then while I'm drawing it, as soon as I turn in the pencil, you know, Derek and I go over and we're like, well, it looks like he's doing this here and there, so we change it. And then finally when I'm painting it, you know, then I'm like, no, he's got to be saying this instead, you know. So I think our letterer decided she really hates us. She's really nice, but I'm sure she really hates working with these guys because, like, you'll be like, no, I think he's saying this. Like, sometimes she's like, dude, make up your mind, you know?
Right. So. But there's a, but you know what? You can see that, to me, you can see the fluidity of the process in the final product. Like, I can, because I feel like, you know, you guys are not afraid. When I read it, it feels like creators who aren't afraid to, like, to throw out the manual, right? Like,
you know, it helps that we're on such a tight schedule that they don't have time to change it.
Yes, that, honestly, I'm all for that. I mean, it the helps, more right? The more we have that going on, the better off we'll be. But, you know, it's like, you know, you get a great bit, like, I mean, maybe this was in the original script. I have no idea. But, like, the whole bit about the villains being in Batman's, the back seat of the Batmobile, and them riffing on, hey, look at it, it's really roomy back here. And they're like, yeah, who knew? There's a back seat. And, like, I mean, that was roll on the floor, like, funny.
That was, like, one of those, that was, like, one of those things where, like, we're doing it. I was like, why don't we just add this in?
Yes, this
I'm
is
like,
what
there again. Let's just add this in. Let's. It, you know, it helps that, you know, you get the, you don't have to end the script right when you turn it in. You can just keep continuing it if you come up with something new, you know. So,
yes, this is what I'm talking about, like, the, I can feel the synergy between you and Derek, and it's benefiting the story hugely, not just from a, I just think with comedy, which is really what you guys are straight up doing, I mean, it's adorable as all get out, but it's mostly just funny, and I think that with comedy, you have to be fluid and flexible like that, and I think it does help if you're on such a tight schedule that nobody can take out your jokes if you want them in. I mean,
yeah,
but it's kind of
like
really
improv,
working.
Like for the most part.
Exactly, exactly. Well, it's pretty exciting. So, well, I'll ask you when we're off air if you want me to cut that thing about schedule or not. But it sounds like you guys are up for keeping it going. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally up for keeping it going. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's something we have to not talk about or, you know, we're not supposed to talk about. But,
okay. Yeah,
it sounds like, I mean, I get the feeling that we should keep going.
Well,
it's one of the things where,
it makes
you know,
me really happy if they're happy, if DC is really happy with it. That's great, too. I mean,
it seems like they're really happy. They, you know, originally we pitched, we only had 12 stories, and when they said to double up, you know.
Yeah, and, that's a huge vote of confidence, right?
And we got, you know, we started out digital. Now, you know, we get our own printed book.
Yeah, was that always the plan for it to come out print as well, or was it just supposed to be digital?
It was in the talks, but it was never like it was never guaranteed.
Yeah.
But when Derek and I pitched it and we got it going, we're like, you know what, we really just want to tell these stories. We'll take anything we can get, really.
Yeah.
And but then when they said, we're gonna need more content. If, you know, we go to print, I was like, yeah, let's do it. And
well,
so
it's really exciting.
I mean, that's really good.
Do you hear mostly, I'm sure you hear mostly, since most comics readers these days seem to be adults, so you probably mostly hear from people like me who are full-grown adults who love it, but do you get any kid fans? Do you get the sense that there are a lot of kids reading it?
I do. It's one of the most flattering things. Like, I'll be at a con and a kid will come up to me and he'll tell me, oh, yeah, you know, I like them. And he'll talk about, like, the turkey issue. And I call it the turkey issue. And, you know, he'll tell me exactly what's going on. I'm like, how old are you? And, you know, this kid was at San Diego. He's like, I'm 3. And then I was like,
oh my
do you know
God.
How to read? And he's like, and his dad was there. He's like, no, I just looked at the pictures. I was like, would you get the story? And he's like, yeah, you know. Well. And I was like, this is awesome. This kid's not even reading the book, but he's looking at the pictures, which is good enough.
That is
and,
so cool.
Yeah, actually, I get that a lot. And, like, you know, a lot of my... Like, the older readers, they'll tell me, you know, they, like, this lady, she brought, like, a ton of books, and she had me sign them all, and I was like, oh, this is cool, you know, like, is this for your shop or something, you know, which I don't mind. I was like, yeah, this is great. She's like, no, I just, you know, I live on this block where it's just all kids. So she basically just gives it to all the neighborhood kids, and, you know, just stuff
cool.
like that. I'm, yeah, it's really great, and I try to spread it out. I have a a friend that my wife's friend, she started a dentistry, so, and I just unload books there. I leave it on the coffee table. So, you know, I do like guerrilla style, like marketing for myself.
That's awesome. So, I wish any of the dentist office I had been in had had these. I probably would have found comics a lot sooner. That's awesome.
You know,
yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I love the book too, and my kids really like it. My son is a big Damian fan, but not like Damian in like Batman Inc. fan. He really likes the Damian in Tiny Titans with the fangy teeth, and then that went away. So now he has an age appropriate Damian, a living Damian to have. You know, I really love Tiny Titans. I mean, I'm sorry, Little Gotham and everything. But you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the work that you did back on Batman, because you did like two of my favorite covers. I think one of my favorite covers of a DC woman of all time, which was the cover you did for Streets of Gotham with Kate Spencer, where she's jumping off a roof.
Oh,
snowy night, which to me is, and I have another one I'm going to bring up too, which is you did a cover, and I think it was for, I'm pretty sure it was part of Battle of the Cowl. You did a cover of Helena Bertinelli as Huntress in the belly window, as we like to call it, costume. And it's the only time I've ever been able to look at that costume and say, yeah, you know, it kind of works. And both
that was the Streets of Gotham. I think we did a two issue with her in it. Yeah. You know, I didn't really know the costume, so I went off what I believe, I think either Marcus Toe or one of the other artists had it. And I was like, you know, this will work. And, yeah. You know, a lot of people, I think, had a complaint about the costume when I drew it. I was like, you know, it's kind of like, they're kind of like panty shots, you know, like, you know, you can draw a Supergirl. Sure, she's wearing a skirt. You don't have to draw the panties. You know, you can,
right.
As an artist, you can make a choice. It can be any costume. You can make it look presentable. You know,
yeah.
Like just because she's wearing a skirt doesn't mean you have to show it being
right.
upskirt
up
every
the
time.
Skirt. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's your choice as an artist. You know, they're like, no, we need to get rid of the skirt. And I'm like, no, you just need to stop drawing like that.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. And I think one of the things, and I've seen it too, and you did a lot of, sketches for your blog and things of the Gotham sirens, you know, Harley and Selina and Tamala. And one of the things that I really appreciate when I look at your art is that the women, when you draw them, they've got a little meat on their bones, you know? I mean, it's like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's such a different look than when you look at a lot of the way other people draw, which is, you know, their legs and boobs. So tell me about...
I just like having them in different sizes. Like, I think...
Yeah,
Harley
looks different.
Like,
Harley looks different than Poison Ivy, as she should.
Right.
Yeah, wait till you see the Harley toy. You're going to be, like, blown away. She's going to be... I try to give them all different shapes, especially... I think most artists have this problem of where we kind of, like, have a template of, you know, certain female characters, certain male characters. And I think when I started, all my characters, I had, like, one look for all the dudes and one look for all the ladies. And then, you know, you just change their hair a little. But when I started drawing the, the Gotham girls, it's like, you know, you're going to be drawing all three of them together all the time. You got to differentiate a little. So. And you try to get into their characters. So. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. And I like how you call her Pamela and not Ivy.
Yeah, well, you know. So, which is your favorite of all of the three
it's Ivy.
Totally, you can
she's
totally tell too.
Yeah, she's just this. She's kind of like the catalyst in the three. You have Catwoman, who's kind of, you know, she's like a good character kind of. Then you have Harley, who's just crazy. Pam's just in the middle. You know, she tries to lean toward her two. You know, they're all best friends, but Pam's like, you know, she's like, oh man, who do I side with? So pretty soon she just has her own crazy self. And yeah, she's kind of like, you know, sometimes she could be like the voice of reason. So yeah.
Well, you spend a lot of time. You did, I think, a little bit of you did Streets of Gotham, and you also did Batman. So you were in the mainline DCU, and then you were doing. Some issues of Brian Q. Miller's Batgirl. And then you went and you sort of left the mainstream DCU and you went off. That was, I think, when you went over to start doing some of the animated universe stuff.
Yeah.
Doing Superman Beyond. So what was that a decision that you made that you wanted to go off and do those characters? Were you?
Yeah.
Were
you, it was a time when I think Derek and I, because I really wanted to work on Batman Beyond. Like mm-hmm. I was already doing the covers for them.
Right.
And, Derek and I was like, oh, let's try to get our own Batman Beyond series. And so they gave us Justice League Beyond because there was already a Batman Beyond book. And I was like, yeah, we'll take that, you know? And they're like, okay. But this is like during the whole time when DC started out doing the digital book. So ours was actually the first digital book.
Right.
And it was just like this, it was like this big learning process and just creating new, the way the paneling was. So we jumped on there for like probably half a year. And like during that half a year, they rebooted.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh man, it's kind of like being away from home and then your family moves, you know? so when I was like, oh, well, you know, I was like, well, at least we're doing this. And, you know, if you're in the Beyond universe, one of the things that helps is like, you're so far in the future that nothing that's happening in the past, I mean, this doesn't
right.
happen in real space travel, you know, time travel, but, you know, we're like, we're so far in the future that, you know, there's nothing that's really affecting us. So I was like, all right, let's stick around here for a while. So we did that for like a little while, and then, you know, I got to a point where I just like, I feel bad for saying this, but I just got sick of drawing Batman.
Yeah.
Like I just, you know, I was like, I was drawing him every page. And then the thing is with me is I obsess over drawing Batman because during my breaks, when I'm not drawing a Batman book, I'm like, oh, let's do a sketch for fun for the blog. What should I draw? I'll draw Batman. And I kind of got sick of myself for a while, and I was like, you know, I got to try a few different things. So we did American Vampire, which I absolutely love because they let me do anything I wanted. And it's, you can look at that and then you look at Little Gotham and you're like, this is not the same.
That's
style
so
at all.
Cool, yeah.
You know, so that was like a lot of fun. Then so I thought I was going to do more stuff like that. But then finally, Little Gotham got picked up because we pitched it like, well, initially I pitched it back in 2006 by myself. And it was like a no-go back then. So I was just sitting on it, waiting for it forever. And then Warner Brothers, not even DC, Warner Brothers picked it up. They're like, hey, you want to do some of this stuff for merchandising in our gallery for the Dark Light and Darkness gallery? I was like, and I didn't know what they were talking about because it came as an email. And then she's like, check out the attachments we sent. I was like, oh, great. They're going to send me attachments of other people's work. And I got to draw like it. So I opened it. It was all Little Gotham stuff that she had found like all over the internet. Like, and this was like someone from Warner Brothers, not even DC, you know, like,
that's awesome.
What do you want me to do with these? Yeah. She's like, what do you want? I was like, what do you want me to do with these? She's like, just draw whatever you like. Just make it fun. You know? I was like, cool. And, yeah, I did that. And then we had a few pieces in that, you know, that We Can Be Heroes, auction charity event thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And like last summer they actually put a bunch through Junk Food where you can see, you can actually get the t-shirts, which I don't think anyone knew about that. I didn't even know about that until they sent
it
to me.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
So, yeah, I didn't know either. At Comic-Con, there's, like, a kiosk you can go to, and you just order the shirt. And it's, like, it's a Little Gotham with Batman and Catwoman and Robin standing on a pile of villains. And that was, like, one of the pieces we did for the gallery. And right after that, I mean, yeah, it was weird. Right after that, we got picked up, and they're like, hey, you want to do the book? I was like, interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's also a good lesson in, like, you know, things coming around. Like, you think something's dead in 2006, but in 2012, it's a whole other story, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, they always find a place for it. And I think in 2006, because when I pitched it at Snow Globe. Snow Globe.
Right.
And they're like, nah, Snow Globe, nah, no one's, that's seasonal, that's a stupid
right.
idea. And, you know, thinking back, it is a stupid idea. Why would you make Snow Globe? You know?
Right.
So.
Right.
Well, the pitch had time to marinate and get refined, and then digital became a big deal and made an avenue in which it could more reasonably be produced. It's great. It all came together.
Yeah, digital helps out a lot. I mean, it's like a place where you can, you know, try out things, and you would get readers you normally wouldn't get. Not everyone. Yeah.
Do you know, and this may be not something you know anything about, but do you know how they decided on the price model for the 99 cents for the digital issues? Because that seems really reasonable to me, especially for the quality we're getting. But I, you know, the pricing models still don't quite make sense to me, like, you know, digital being the same price as print initially and things like that. So I was wondering if you knew anything about how that worked.
Yeah, I have no.
Now,
no,
if they were just like,
works.
It's going to cost 99 cents, it'll be this many pages, go. That was
yeah, it. Yeah, are the 28-page books 99 cents also? Or?
No, the print are $3.99, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean like the digital story, though. Like, oh. Not, are the 10 pages story, or the other?
Yeah, they're
the digital stories are also 99, yeah.
But then when they gather three stories for print, they're not $3.99, which is kind of weird. Although
$3.99.
Yeah.
So $2.99, I think, right?
No, nope. Yeah. $3.99.
So it's an extra buck.
Which doesn't make sense, and this is really outside your purview. This has nothing to do with you, but that, to me, it's not unreal to me that they would be $3.99 to collect three stories, because then you're getting it in print. But if that's true, then regular comics, like reading a Batman comic that costs $2.99, it shouldn't be $2.99 online. So when you pick it up the same day, like that math doesn't make sense anymore. So it's kind of a weird thing. But it must be however they came to the decision that much content was 99 cents digitally. It must be working if they think it's going to keep going. It must be profitable. It must be doing well. And that I'm all for. So
you are doing well, though. Your sales are like, you're like one of the top digital comics, right?
I think so. I think I think when we first came out, I was doing real well. I think we're like, I think one of the biggest countries is like Japan and I think Mexico or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have no idea how they come up with those prices. That's all math. That's why I draw.
That's why I'm an artist, so I don't have to answer these questions.
I'm like, oh.
When you were drawing like an issue of Batman, when you were working with Baldini on like Streets of Gotham or Batman, and you had to deliver, you know, a 22-page or 20-page issue, is your work? How do you sort of pace yourself with digital versus that? Is there a difference, or do you just keep to a similar schedule?
I guess I work a little differently when I worked with on the main book where I just basically do the pencils. It's I go a little tighter, because you want it to translate well for when the anchor gets it. When I work on this book, I go a little looser because I know I'm going to do colors over and then. I mean, it's just a different process. But I mean, both, I don't know if I'm answering right, but yeah, both schedules are like, it's pretty not, it's not really great. Like when I was doing Streets of Gotham, a lot of people don't know, but when I did the Batgirl issues, I did those issues the same time as I did Streets of Gotham. So instead of doing one book a month, I was doing two books a month.
Wow.
And it was like really, it was really like a hectic time because there was like a mix up in scheduling somehow. I forgot what happened, but it ended up like for like 2 months, 2 or 3 months I was doing. That's why you saw like my issue come and then there was another issue and then my issue came back. And
right.
It was like, yeah, it was because I was doing like a few different issues a month. And then like I think one of those months we fell in somehow. We agreed to do a 30-page special issue of with another Detective Comics. So it was like a really bad summer. That's all I remember.
Your wife
it was like
ready
a really
to divorce
bad summer.
You.
Yeah. But I just kind of, like a lot of people were like, oh, well, you know, as long as you do a page a day and, you know, it's like, that's the bare minimum once you get into comics. Cause like when I was breaking it, they're like, can you do a page a day? Then you can do comics. I was like, yeah, I can do a page a day. I couldn't do a page a day, but I just said that. And then when I got in, I realized page a day was like the bare minimum to keep the schedule going.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you, cause I was doing a lot of covers too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm a freelancer, so I have a bunch of other things to do, too. So, it's just, you try to do as much as you can in a day. You know, you shouldn't, but, yeah, and still have a life, but it's not worth it.
It's a tough balance.
Is there any character that you would like to put into Little Gotham that you haven't gotten to yet?
You know, I would love it if we could do, tried pitching this and like I have this idea for like a little boys and girls club where we have Damien, Colin, Stephanie Brown, Cassandra Cain, and what's his name, Clarion. Clarion actually shows up in a chapter for Labor Day.
Oh great. Awesome. I love him.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, and you know, with Lil Gotham, it's almost like one of the things where I have fun depending on what color they are, and Clarion is blue, so he's like a lot of fun to paint.
Is that why
the reason
Mr.
you don't see Green Lantern is because green's horrible for me in watercolor. I have the worst time with green.
Is that why we see a lot of Mr. Freeze? Just lots of blue.
Yeah, I love. Well, I love drawing Mr. Freeze, and I love his story. He's like, you know, he's like one of my favorite.
He's a great character. And your design for him is so good.
Yeah, he's just fun, you know. Like, and you know, his story. There's, you can never run out of good stories for him. I think Paul Dini just made this, like, this excellent character for all of us to like expand on. And yeah, he's great.
Well, man, I would love to see the little clubhouse. That would be pretty much. I could just die happy at that point. So I don't know. Keep working on it. Maybe one day they'll let it go. So who are we going to see? Yeah. So you said Clarion's coming up for an issue in the future. Who else are we going to see for the issues that are planned out? Any hints you can give?
We have a, and obviously, I mean, we talked about Pamela. So there's an issue in the fall where it's an all Ivy issue. It's basically Ivy, you know, she's kind of like all about, you know, spring and blossoming and bloom and all that. And, but, you know, she's kind of bummed out in the fall.
That's good.
You know, she starts, like, losing her color and everything. And pretty much she's going through, like, a bad time. And so, you know, her best friend, Harley, is like, she's like, oh, man, I'm going to cheer you up, Red, you know. So she basically, the whole idea is basically Harley goes out of her way to make Ivy feel better, like, you know, during this bad time for her. And the thing is, she, you know, this is one of the few times where you'll see, like, her bossing Joker around, you know. He's like, dude, she's like, what are you doing? I didn't tell you to do this, you know. It's like, can't you see, you know, Ivy's not having a good day, you know. So she's like, basically Harley kind of takes over and just, yeah, she kind of helps out her best friend.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those fun stories. And,
it's just
yeah,
so simple.
Way in the, it is simple. I mean,
but,
you know, it's
but
a
that's
simple
what,
idea.
That's what's
but
brilliant lot, about it. Like, it doesn't have to be complicated. Like,
yeah, not everything has to be a summer, you know, blockbuster.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
that's
exactly.
That's the way we see it. But,
exactly.
Yeah, we have a bunch of characters, you know, like, coming in. We have, I think in the Labor Day issue, actually has a lot. We have, like, Riddler, Hush. And sometimes, you know, I'll say, like, we have them, but either we'll have them a big part or a little part. But to me, they're all, like, as long as they're in the book, it's a lot of fun. And it only takes a few, you know, they only have to say a few things to make them fun, you know.
Well, I for one, am really excited to talk to you about this because your enthusiasm for it still seems really high, which makes me feel like we're going to keep getting it for a while now, which makes me really happy. So.
Yeah. Derek and I, we basically, if they can keep us around, we will, you know.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, I just love it. It makes me so happy again. Thank you for, you know, including Oracle because it makes me happy that there's this little place in the DCU where these characters still exist and you know, in sort of a way that we kind of remember them. I mean, there's a lot of really great things about the reboot, but there's some characters who, you know, obviously didn't go into it. So I'm really happy that,
you know, I'm really glad you guys like it. I think the feeling I get from a lot of people is that, you know, they feel like, they think like Derek and I are trying to fight the reboot or not do the reboot, but really we're not. It's you know, I'm just drawing things and writing things that I remember that was great, and I get a lot of things where they're like, oh, don't you want, you know, Oracle back in the bat suit? And I'm like, dude, I'm like 37. For as long as I can remember, she was Oracle.
Yeah.
I don't remember her being anything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, except for in the animated series, which is like, you know, of course it's a different canon, but we just mix in whatever's fun. Like, a lot of stuff you can see is mixed in from the animated series. Sometimes I feel like our book is like if Lego made a comic book, where they're just using all kinds of fun things. And I was like, sometimes I feel like that's what our book might be like, you know, considered just a combination of all canons and just something that's fun for everyone. So
I love it.
To me, your book is the perfect argument for why canon doesn't matter at all, because I just want the best possible story and I don't really care about the canon. Like, as long as it's like, has the best of intentions and is done with high quality and is respectful of all the characters. And I just, there's an innate feeling in Little Gotham, that I think comes directly from you and Derek. That's, you know, we get these characters. Yep. We love them as much as you do. Here are some awesome, hilarious stories about them. Like, enjoy them. Like, and what's better than that? I mean, that's just so much. That's exactly what comics are supposed to be about to me. And it just, it's really good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, yeah, it's, if we can make a story where someone can just jump in on issue 8 and not have to read the last 10 issues, or, you know, the last 7 issues, you know.
It's amazing.
You know, you can do that. It's fun.
It's amazing, isn't it, though? Like, how once you don't get hung up in continuity and canon, like, it's just, here's how we write this story. And if you break it down correctly, you can just jump right in. I mean,
you can, yeah. And these characters have been around so long. You know, they've been around so long that it could swing either way. I mean, my kids, they read it. They don't say, oh, no, but in the last issue, you know, blah, 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 panel.
No,
they don't care about that. They're like, oh, man, look, the deer.
Yeah.
You know, like, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
The deer.
How are your kids, too?
Mine, I have a 9-year-old and I have a 14-year-old. So
yours are
what? Yours what, like nine and six?
I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old.
A 7-year-old. Okay, yeah. So that's a great age because they love comics. But you know what? They watch TV and they read comics, and you know, they're all about the character. As long as the character is acting like the character, they don't really care about what
they don't care.
You know, when they watch Adventure Time on TV, they watch it as each episode is a complete experience for them.
Yeah,
you know,
they'll sometimes they're like they'll know the backstory of the characters,
right?
Which is good because it's always good to know the origin. But they don't care, you know, like you know, you watch SpongeBob. They're like, well, he likes jelly fishing, but you know, why would he make jelly sandwiches? Yeah. You know, they don't think that far into it. They're like, does that mean he's killing the jellyfish? You know, they don't think that far into it.
Yeah.
We do, you know, and we're like, oh man.
We're nitpicky. We're all like, no, you can't do that because and then that happened there. And they're all like, whoa, look at that. That's so funny. I can't believe it. So, good way to experience media, in my opinion.
It must be really rewarding to have kids and be creating something that you love, but that they can also love that's, you know, and especially... You know, the state of DC right now is very dark. So, you know, being one of the only guys who's doing something that someone young can really get into as a lover of these characters, that must be pretty rewarding.
You know, like, that's the only reason I do it. As soon as comics all get really, like, happy and light, I'm going back to dark because I want to be the only one doing that.
No. You want to be the only guy bucking the trend.
That's the only reason. Like, I just want to. No, it is. It's really fun. Like, I think it's a good time too because, like, right when my kids are at this age, they're actually starting to pick up, like, you know, books that I work on because for the last 10 years, I mean, I started out working on like Wildcats, which was a great book, but it was like a mature reader's book, and there's a lot of dark stuff going on. That mature reader's book.
And there's nothing
wrong with that. But I could, you know.
That's fine.
So what?
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's good for variety to have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to, you know, jump back and forth. And, you know, this is something I can actually hand to them. And now, like, at my age, I'm meeting, you know, other, you know, I have friends with kids and stuff. So I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm working on. I can just, you know, toss them a copy.
Oh, that's cool.
Instead of like, hey, here's this, but you might want to look through it first before you let the kids have it. You know, like,
So, do your kids like it? Do they respond to it, I assume? Yeah?
Oh, yeah. My daughter, she loves it. She kind of sits through with me when it comes out. She'll ask me, she'll be like, are you... She's the one that's more like, you know, how come you didn't do this holiday? Where's that holiday, you know? And, like, so I'm like, dude, it's not always about holidays. Come on. And, like, yeah, she's a lot of fun. Like, sometimes I'll try out jokes with them,
mm-hmm.
and she'll be like, I don't get it, Daddy, you know?
That was my next question. That's awesome.
Yeah, but she's the 7-year-old. My son, he's kind of like, you know, he's into it, but he'll fall in and out of it. You know, now he's at the age where he's all about, like, you know, a little more like, you know, oh, man, it's Green Lantern or Transformers.
Right,
and,
I want to be a little more grown up kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I think he's trying to fight with me, but but the daughter, she's still good. So I got rid of the boy. He's out of here. So.
He's not in the creative room anymore.
Yeah, he's not allowed in the room. No, he's... He's funny though. He's a huge Green Lantern fan. So like, I did a Green Lantern Justice League Beyond cover, and it was like they needed they told me on Friday and they needed it uploaded by Sunday or something like that. And I was like, hey, you want to help me create some Green Lanterns? And he loved it. So he came up with all these monsters that he sketched, and then I just put them all in the cover.
He
had a blast, and, you know, it's something that is his, and I let him sign the cover and everything. So, yeah, he had a lot of fun.
That's really cool.
But he's not into Batman as much as Green Lantern, so I don't know.
He'll come around. Everyone comes around to Batman eventually, right? Anyway, all right, well, we'll let you go. We've kept you so long already, but Sue, did you have any final questions for Dustin?
No, just
keep it up, man. Make me so happy. Keep doing it.
Thanks so much, guys. It was really fun.
Let Derek know what big fans we are. Maybe next time you guys come on, you both come on. That would be cool.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, we should have like a, as soon as I figure out this technology, how to get to.
I'll have Oracle hook you up, Dustin. Don't worry.
She'll update your Wi-Fi. Oracle will.
I know. It's like technology is a pain.
Well, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
And please come back sometime and talk more of more bat awesomeness over here.
Yeah, maybe we can do like a year in wrap up or something. You know?
I would love
like
that. I would love
we
that.
Start a new year.
Yeah,
Derek would be totally down with that. So.
Yeah, that would be super cool, especially once you guys know for sure that you're staying and you've worked out some additional issues or plotted them out, and we'd love to come on and celebrate another year of Little Gotham. So
excellent. Yeah. All or we right. can go on and be like, it's over, guys. And
no,
really
no, no. Then you can't come on. If that's the answer, you can't come on.
Very cool.
All right. Thanks so much, Dustin. Take care.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye.
All right. Bye. Anyway, he was awesome.
Yeah.
God, Batman Little Gotham is one of those things where I just want it so badly to go on forever that I'm like not quite sure what'll happen to me when it's not around anymore. And you know, eventually it will end, I'm sure. And I don't know.
I love his stuff. I'd love to see him, you know, I mean, you know, I meant it very seriously. I did a piece on Dustin and when, you know, and how he draws women. It was like one of the posts I did very early on in my blog because I was just so taken with how he understood that all women are not, you know, just a pair of legs and boobs and tits and an ass, you know. Yeah. And I mean, there are other artists who I will not name who also draw Harley, Selena, and Pamela. I'm not even going to say it. I'll leave guess. But you know, and I love that portrait he did of Helena. I mean, she looked like she, you know, she had some real meat on her. You don't see women drawn dirty. I mean, these women are supposed to, especially somebody like Helena Bertinelli, who doesn't have any metapowers. I mean, she's just like this woman who goes out and puts on this costume and goes and beats the crap out of people. She's not going to weigh 103 pounds and have no muscles. You know, she's going to be, you know, she's going to be solid and tough. And then when she kicks the shit out of Man-Bat, which was the issue that cover was done, you know, he's going to feel it. And the same with Kate Spencer. You know, Kate Spencer, she has the powers of the suit, but you know that I wish someday I'm gonna find someone to blow up that cover to me.
I love that cover.
That
is so
like,
good.
Was that one of your best covers of all time?
Yeah, it was. It was on one of my 52 lists. Yeah.
Yeah, I think,
and it was high because it's really gorgeous.
Yeah, and I think that was before I even knew you, and I was like, all right, this chick's okay because she likes what I like. So that's. Because to me, that's
the barometer.
Yeah. You know, it's like, okay. Because it's not like a Kate Spencer isn't particularly like a famous character. I think if you're familiar with the DCU and you've been reading it for a while. But, you know, the fact is that cover just hit everything that was just so wonderful about women in comics. In the fact that she was so confident. She was drawn like in with perspective, and she wasn't drawn like, again, a pair of legs and the boobs and an ass. It was I loved everything about
me,
it.
To me, as someone who draws, but not particularly well, for me, a lot of this comes down to just the difference between artists who work in comics and really good artists who work in comics. Yeah. Because it's just comes down to the difference between, you know, and I think Dustin even said it himself, I mean, without saying it in those words, of that when he started out, they all looked the same, because still learning, you know? Yeah. And I try to be lenient of that. I mean, you know, another great example of that is Mikhail Janin, right? Like when when you first started talking to him, and when he was first doing Justice League Dark, like he, you know, his artwork was very pretty, but he had a real problem with like same face on women and everything, and just the kind of default setting people give women all the same face and all the same body types, and yet he has turned into such a talented artist. By caring about that and by working his craft, including doing one of the best covers I've ever seen with a woman on it, which was that Madame Xanadu when she's aging. That is so hard to do in comics.
Yeah,
most
artists
cannot fucking do that. And he nailed it. And I just think it's largely a matter of talent and working on it and caring about it. I mean, and I totally agree with you. Like, I'm willing to forgive, you know, Buffy is allowed to be 5'0" and 100 and nothing pounds because she has superpowers. So part of the joke is that she's 5'0" and, you know, 100 and nothing and she can knock you out. That's part of the bit. So that's fine. Draw her like that. But Huntress doesn't have superpowers. So she needs to look to a degree like an athlete, like someone who can hold her own. And, you know, an understanding and a respect of that is key. I mean, we've also talked about it with like Amanda Connor's Power Girl. Like that, the body that Amanda Connor draws on Power Girl can actually support her massive chest.
Yeah, I know.
And it's the
I
difference between, you know, no disrespect to the departed Michael Turner, but, you know, some of those famous images that went around. I mean, that would break your back.
I know.
Like, if
I know.
You didn't have the physique.
I agree. No, I agree. So, and I agree. I remember when I called him out and I said, well, you know, he needs to work on his faces. Yeah, so love Dustin Nguyen, love Lil Gotham, love having Merkel drinking hot stuff. So what's going on with you? What else have you got going on?
Not much. Just was finishing a big writing deadline this week.
Yeah.
But, I think I finished. Cool. So then I would love to say then I could take a break, but I actually have to go right back into something else. So
you're always so busy. I've seen some of the stuff. You know, Kelly does the cover of the week kind of thing. I love reading into that. I don't know if people know that Kelly has two things that you can go to. You can go to She Has No Head, which is on a biweekly basis, but she also has her own blog, which is 1979 Summit Finalist. And even I sometimes forget to pop in there and see things like her covers of the week. And of course, she does her infamous strong solicits every couple of weeks. So you should just make sure you bookmark both of those so that you can get all Kelly. And she's over on Lit Reactor as well. So you're very busy.
I am. How about you?
Well, I went to Boston Comic Con this past week, and it was just great. Had a wonderful time. Got to see lots of comic fans that I interact with on Twitter, like Dr. Ange, who's a huge Supergirl fan, and I met a couple of other lady bloggers. Met Corinna from Geek Mom, who's been on the show with us before, and the woman Alexa, who runs Ladies Making Comics. So that was really cool, and got to meet a lot of creators. Phil Jimenez, who was wonderful, Amy Reeder, Ming Doyle, all big fans of Three Chicks. Also, our good friend Scott Snyder, who is like a superstar. You know, when I went to New York Comic Con, you know, he was like, you had to get wristbands to like see him. But you know, there were other people you had to get wristbands for, like Jeff Johns and a couple other people. But now, oh my God, at Boston, it was like you had to have a ticket to get in line to see Scott Snyder. And then like you would hear over the PA system, which was actually pretty crappy. That's one of the things that they really need to work on. You would hear like, so you would get a ticket and you would have to wait in line for him. And that was the only creator that you had to do it for. So he is now Mr. Big Superstar, and it's great to see. It's wonderful. And there were some other people. Brian Azzarello was there. Dan Dio was there. Aaron Lopresti was there. People from Marvel as well. Tony Daniel was there. And it was a great show. I know that I talked to a couple of creators, and I talked to a couple of publishers as well who were, you know, they wanted to come because of Boston, what had happened in Boston with the bombings. And so, you know, as a comic fan from Boston, I want to thank all of you who made that decision. You know, it was very hard for a lot of the comic people, the people who depend on the Boston Comic Con for a good chunk of their business, both local companies, but there are also people, I was talking to some guys, you know, who literally was sitting on the docks at the Hines when they canceled the show and had to turn around and drive all the way back to Connecticut and New Jersey with all their stock unloaded. You know, they made it come through, and it was in a great place. And Boston, may God, you know, every year that show gets bigger and bigger. I can remember when I was in the basement of an insurance building. I literally got knocked over like three times, like digging through long boxes. And somebody would come with like, you know, a huge bag and just like swat and knock me over. And I'd be like, oh my God, get me out of this place. And then it's been at the Hines last couple years, and it's been terrific. I was down at one place that was terrible. They hadn't really paid attention to the fire laws. And so they had weird fire rules where you can only have so many people in the area at the same time. So the lines were like 5 hours long. It was just bad. But that was just a minor quirk in it. This was great. It was really, it's growing into just a bigger and bigger show. So that was, it was lots of fun. I picked up some comics. I got some nice commissions.
Sue got like the coolest commission,
yeah,
collaborative, yeah, commission ever. I'll link to it. You guys should go see it on her DC Women Kicking,
yeah,
Ass. But she basically had the blank X-Men number one variant, where the sketch cover variant where you could have artists draw in, and then but she had five or six different artists draw.
Five.
Each draw one character is,
yeah,
it's awesome. It's one of the coolest sketch type things I've ever seen.
It was a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I like to go to these shows, and I usually have one or two people that I really, you know, I want to get sketched. Now with Phil Jimenez, and I wrote these stories up on my blog, I've been chasing him for a Donna Troy for literally 3 years. I mean, 3 years on, off, and it was like, no way, I'm like, give me a goddamn Donna Troy, which I just love, it's Donna Troy. And, you know, and then there's just, like, ones where I have, like, you know, you have a list of people, like, okay, you know, and I think everybody is pretty aware, you know, I love Barbara Gordon. I love Barbara Gordon's Batgirl. I also really like Chris Oracle. And, you know, through the years, I've gotten tons of Oracle commissions from, like, really great artists, like Adam Hughes, Phil Noto, and Dustin Nguyen. You know, some of them you just don't ever think, wow, I don't ever get it. And one of them is Brian Selfridge, who actually drew Oracle in her very first issue. And I know that because when Oracle disappeared from the New 52, I did a whole series on her, and Scott Peterson did a whole post about that one story. And Brian Selfridge just hasn't been around. He hasn't been doing shows, never been anything. I never see him on list. So when I knew he was coming to Boston, I was like, oh, it will be mine. Oh, it will be mine. And it's gorgeous. I mean, most stunning commission I've ever gotten. I mean, I have no disrespect to anybody that's done a commission for me, but this one was just, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's big words, man, because you are the commission
queen. I've got a lot of them, but this is, did you see it?
I did. It was very nice.
It's very gorgeous. So, and it was just, it was amazing because I was watching him work on it, you know, and so many of the people I get commissions from really do, you know, do Copic pens and things like that, and I don't get to see them do it. You know, and I got to stand there because I had a run because I was having dinner with some friends, and I was late, and I was like, you know, what are you going to say? Come on, Brian, can you finish up?
Hurry up!
Tip, 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 tip.
Chop, chop!
So I stood there to watch him finish it, and it was like watching a master at work. So it was really fun and really great. And so that's basically it. I don't think there's anything else that I'm really working on or doing. Or anything that was interesting this week. It hasn't been a very interesting couple of weeks. You know, I mean, the whole thing with Wonder Woman, the TV show's not going to happen. Like, oh my God, color me shocked. Like, I haven't.
Isn't it just paused?
Yeah.
They're not saying it's
dead,
right?
Paused.
But
right.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it happens.
Yeah, the pause means nobody's working on a script right now. So
yeah.
you know, it's not, if nobody's working on a script, I mean, I know it's only August, but, you know, you would have to have people start, or maybe I might be taking the summer off. I don't know what to say. You know, it's kind of like, at some point, and, you know, I haven't read one story that where anybody's like, yeah, Wonder, well, no, I have. I mean, there's always going to be those people who are like, who cares about Wonder Woman? You know, she's boring and da-da-da. Most people are just like, come on. I mean, with Jeff Busher a couple of weeks ago. So that's been really interesting. As far as anything else going on in comics, I really haven't seen anything that's been, like, super interesting or you know, like any new artists or new, you know.
I always feel like August is a pretty...
Like, yeah, August is a dead month. You know,
it's post Comic Con. People are tired. It's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, really. September is sort of like, I guess, the unofficial start of everything. When does the Age of Atom start for Marvel? Does it start?
I don't know.
And we have DC has its Forever Evil month. With the, those covers do look cool though. I saw them. You know
what? But what? I still feel whatever, but curiosity is going to cause me to ask. So what do they look like then?
They look like they're like plastic, and they're like, you know.
So they're sort of like an upgraded hologram type thing.
No.
All right then.
Yeah, I guess so. But they're different moving parts.
But like you have to turn the book to make it move, right?
No, not really. It kind of like just, I mean, it's not like you shake it like a hologram and look at it just different ways. It kind of like just goes on and on. I saw a couple of them when I was at Boston. I think I'd like the Joker one. I don't think there's anything else that maybe I want to get. Although I have to say, I saw the artwork for Forever Evil, the Poison Ivy one, and it looked really amazingly good.
Who's the artist on that?
Forak, I think it was. I'll have to look it up. But it had, they showed three pages of it, and, you know, two were sort of one day Ivy being Ivy. Then they have this adorable, like, water-painted, like, little page of little Ivy, you know, with a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, the difference between the two. I was like, okay, so that looks really interesting to me. So, yeah, I certainly am not going to pick up all the issues, you know, but I think I will pick up a couple here and there. And then DC goes into the... Then they go into their continuation of Zero Year where everybody's getting, it's like Oprah came to town. You're getting Zero Year. You're getting Zero. And it's like, I was reading this today and I'm like, boy, you know, the theory that I had that eventually DC Comics should just change its name to Batman Comics is coming true because out of Batman Zero Year, it's like, you, it's Batman Zero Year. And now here's Jon Stewart, the Green Lantern Zero Year. As part of Batman Zero Year. And then they have like, and here's somebody else's Zero Year that I can't remember who it was, but it's like, wow, everybody's going to be like connected to Batman, you know, eventually, which makes sense because good God knows outside of Superman Unchained, you know, the Superman's kind of like a shipwreck these days. So
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. Nothing.
No.
I mean, nothing. You know. I've given up.
No. Well, there's some really.
I always feel that way in August, to be honest. I always want to.
Well, there's a lot of great stuff. I'm going to do a post that's going to come up about, you know, like, don't let, you know, August is, it's the doldrums, but there's a lot of great stuff coming up. I mean, there's been some previews and beautiful artwork out there for Pretty Deadly, which is Emma Rios and Kelly Sudokonic's piece. New book coming out from Image, and so I'm super excited about that. Obviously, we still have Lazarus, which was terrific. Second issue. I'm looking really forward to third. So that's lots of fun. American Vampire's coming back again. So super excited about that. And I'm actually super excited about some more of the Vertigo stuff that's going to be coming down the pike. As you know, we reviewed one of them today. So, but yeah, no, I haven't seen anything like new from DC in terms of a new issue or a new comic. So we'll see what's coming off there. As far as Marvel is concerned, you know, as long as they give me my Captain America and my Hawkeye and my Young Avengers and my X-Men, I'm pretty happy. As far as Fearless Defenders, you know, I was glad that Emma Rios did an issue.
You mean Stephanie Hans?
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephanie Hans. My mistake. I was
so
thinking...
so gorgeous, so good. I just wish. You know, there's, yeah. You know, some of the stuff going on in that book is not so good. It's not so encouraging. I mean, I don't know.
It was a beautiful book. I'm glad I bought it. I love her art.
The artwork was off the chain. It was insane. I wish she was drawing it regularly, although I don't think, because Stephanie does all the art and fully digitally painted stuff that looks like high-end watercolor, I'm sure she can't do a monthly book. But I would love to see her doing more book interiors. More importantly, why isn't she doing more covers? I don't know. Marvel has been very smart, in my opinion, over the last little while, making really good choices. Adam stuff be damned, because I'm trying not to even pay attention. But I don't know why they let her go on not doing regular covers anymore. Her Journey into Mystery covers were regularly the best covers every month. I don't know. They should bring her back on. I mean, she did some great Young Avengers covers, variants. She's been doing really cool variant covers for Suicide Risk over at, I guess it's Boom. But I don't know. Marvel's a fool to let her out of their grasp. I mean, her star is fully on the rise.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. So, yeah. So that's it, I think, for us. Appreciate, again, all the comments and stuff. And
yeah, you guys have really been making an effort, and it makes us very
happy. We appreciate it. Yeah. We do. So I guess...
I try my best to go in and respond to stuff left on Comics Should Be Good. It's sometimes hard, just like with you guys, where it's hard to remember coming back after you listen to an episode. It's hard for me to remember to come back a week or two later, but I am trying to make sure I always come back and respond.
I gotta get in there more often too. I was a little scattered last week. Honestly, I haven't even listened to the podcast from a couple weeks ago. It's just been incredibly busy for me because I've been finishing up a lot of stuff as I prepare to move on to the next part of my life. So, but yeah, no, thank you so much. And I guess that's it. So let's see. 2 weeks from now is what? I think I'm going to be away, so we should talk.
Okay, well, let's talk. Right. We'll figure out when we're going to have another cast.
All right.
All right, everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Three Chicks. All material copyright 2013, all rights reserved. For more information, contact us at 1979 semifinalist@gmail.com or visit us at the Comic Should Be Good blog on comicbookresources.com. All the views expressed on the podcast are the views of the individual expressing them and do not necessarily represent the views of Comic Should Be Good or Comic Book Resources. Our theme song is produced by Nick Furious, whose music can be found at nickfurious.com.